Welcome back to the Rural Roundup, hosted by me, Kerry Hammond. This show is produced in association with the Scottish Government. This episode is part of a spotlight mini-series titled Trees of the Gaelic World. This mini-series, hosted by Jeanette Sutherland, a senior consultant for SAC Consulting in Portree, will feature four episodes, each looking at a species of tree. The episodes will look at the Gaelic language and lore surrounding the species, and advice from the Woodland Trust on the best conditions and how to manage or establish that tree on our land in the current day. Bringing us the language and lore is Dr. Michael Newton, a scholar in the States with extensive knowledge on Gaelic folklore. Our advice and technical information comes from the following advisors from the Woodland Trust. Viv Halcrow tells us all about birch. Iona Hyde tells us about yew. Alistair Firth tells us about oak. And Alan Crawford is here to tell us about Scots pine. I'll hand over to Jeanette Sutherland now for this episode's tree.
This episode is about yew. If you are inspired to grow this tree on your croft, please see the show notes for further advice. Remember, the Gaelic world is much smaller than when the first alphabet was created, so please check each species' geographic range.
Trees of the Gaelic World, Cruven Sil nan Gael. I'm going to start this episode by looking at the yew tree, which is called yewr in modern Scottish Gaelic. Although the yew is not common, its presence is attested in the Gaelic names of places across Scotland. To give just a few examples, Tome the Hewrich near Inverness means Hill of the Yewwood. Craig and yewr on Mull means the Craig of the Yew. Yewry Loch on the Isle of Arran in Gaelic is called Loch na Hewry, which means the Loch of the Yewwood. Glen Ewer in Argyll is properly Glaun Ewer, the Glen of the Yew Tree. I introduced the Ogham alphabet in the first episode of this podcast series. Gaels invented the Ogham alphabet no later than the 4th century AD, inspired by the Latin alphabet, but refashioned on the model of trees. Every letter has a Gaelic name, and many of them are trees. The letter I in the Ogham alphabet is assigned to the Gaelic word iag, which is understood to be an alternative name for the yew. The yew tree can have a very, very long lifespan, over thousands of years. Gaels realized this, for an early medieval commentary about the Ogham alphabet states, quote, "It is to you that the name eldest of trees belongs," unquote. I mentioned three sacred yew trees in Scotland in the previous episode. The longevity of the species makes it an obvious choice for a manifestation of the archetype of the tree of life. The characteristics of different species of trees and the quality of the wood that they produced was, of course, well known to all. It was practical, valuable information. Familiarity with varieties of tree species and the nature of trees provided a set of metaphors and analogies that pervade traditional Gaelic thought. To put it another way, the pre-modern Gaelic mindset incorporated the metaphor, "people are trees," to a profound degree. There are many ways in which people are understood to be like trees in the Gaelic mindset. The simplest way in which the tree affinity is expressed is in the use of tree terms for people. Words for trees at various stages of growth, as well as tree limbs, are used just as though they mean person. These words include cruv, crown, falion, fiúi, fiúran, flescoch, gas, galan, gasri, geig, and oganoch, which translate in order to tree, branch, twig, timber, sapling, rod, sprig, stalk, timber, branch, and seedling. A similar pattern is that the Gaelic words that describe parts of trees can also be used of parts of humans. For example, geig can mean both a tree branch and a human arm. Mier, or meir, can mean both a tree branch and a human finger. Dos can mean both foliage and human hair. Rusk can mean both tree bark and human clothing, and so on. Gaelic proverbs exploit this double speak to powerful effect. Here are three examples. Ferdi freven kalma avik falian diedoch. A straight sapling may have crooked roots. In other words, surface appearances can be deceiving. Lupen falian is chanarschliche chrövorst. Bend the sapling and the tree won't fail you. In other words, shape your children while they are young and pliable. Is dul donalian avi maravias and stoch. The sapling inherits the character of the trunk. In other words, like father, like son. Implications of praise and satire are pervasive in Gaelic tradition, and tree species carry connotations that can be used to this effect. Just as some people are noble and exalted, while others are humble and lowly, so too there are species of tree that are noble and exalted, while others are ignoble and lowly. The Gaelic terms sur and dur signify these two polar opposites. Once you know the classification scheme, you can flatter or insult someone by your choice of tree. There are loads of examples of this in Gaelic literature and tradition. One of them appears in a long song poem by the Jacobite poet Alistair MacVeistert Alistair in the aftermath of the defeat of the prince's army at the Battle of Culloden. Colin Campbell of Glyn-Ewer is reproached with the line, Getullum callan Glyn-Ewer, Bjarlum gambuer, it's not Bjarna. Although I like Colin of Glyn-Ewer, I wish he were yewwood and not alder. The yew is a noble tree, the alder an ignoble tree, and Alistair MacVeistert Alistair says that Campbell was not deserving of the favourable associations implied by the name of his place of residence. The most celebrated example of the application of this classification scheme occurs in a poem composed by Síle na Cepaigh, the daughter of the 15th chief of the MacDonalds of Cepaigh in Lochaber, Gillespic MacGowan. She married Alexander Gordon of Camlemore near Tomantowl by 1685. Síle composed a long elegy to Alistair Dhu, the 11th MacDonald of Glengarry, on his death in about 1721, and praised him with a long list of positive associations. Amongst them is the following stanza, which contains 8 trees. Batuan tuur asa choli, batuan darach daingin lodged, batuan cullin, batuan drayin, batuan tavel moloch blavar, haro mir anet jen chrien, Charo dolia rifiarna, charo dacharsis rileven, batu lenin namban aling. You were the yew from out of the wood. You were the strong and steadfast oak. You were the holly, you were the blackthorn. You were the knotted, blossoming apple. There wasn't a finger in you of aspen. You had no connection with the alder. You had no relationship to the elm. You were the sweetheart of beautiful women. It is clear from this list that the yew, oak, holly, blackthorn, and apple are the noble trees, while the aspen, alder, and lime are ignoble trees. Besides being the daughter of a celebrated poet, her upbringing in Lochaber would have afforded her the experience of many trees, and there was said to have been an orchard at the MacDonald residence at Cepaigh itself. The distinction between sur, noble, and dur, non-noble, can be found in other forms of Gaelic cultural expression. Consider the proverb, Sníavi tírna fiarna tuahanach darich. A lord of alder can mangle a tenant of oak. This implies that even a relatively weak aristocrat has the power to ruin a relatively strong or resilient tenant. Despite the contrary personal traits, the effects of social class are too great to overcome. One of the most elaborate and extended utilizations of tree symbolism and Gaelic tradition is to be found in the song commonly known today as Cruvnan Uol, Tree of the Apples. It is a love song composed in the late 16th century by a woman expressing her infatuation for Mackay of the Rins of Idla. Here is a short excerpt from a much longer text. Cruvnan Uol, Yegnan Avol, Cruvnan Uol, Guro Gialat, Ach Mahedu Gana Cholia Yurich, Aini Hain, a Cruvas Lumsa, Cruvas Milsha, a Spuike Ulan, Cruv Vengenach, Feirach Uloch, Buna Fas, Sabara Lubug, Samenganen, Ergach Tuvi, Ulan Trauma, Dauna, Dluvor. O tree of apples, O branch of the apple tree, O tree of apples, may God be with you. If you go to the yew wood, mind the tree that belongs to me, the tree of the sweetest and juiciest apples, the tree abounding in branches, pears, and apples, the trunk growing and the end of branches bowing down with branches on all sides, thick, heavy, dark red apples. This is a tree that is flourishing, expansive, and attractive. The imagery is sensuous and erotic, and there is a hint of the motif of the wildwood where lovers meet in secret. Both the apple tree and yew tree are featured in the poem, and in fact, the same song is known in some traditions as Cruv an Yuid, Tree of the Yew. The tree is a rich and flexible symbol in Gaelic tradition, not separate and detached from human beings, but intimately connected to us and our lives. We are trees, and trees are us. Gales knew this well before modern biology and ecology confirmed our intertwined origins and destinies.
What native yew do we have in Scotland?
There are actually remarkably few yew trees in Scotland, and most of what we do have are probably associated with churchyards and places of spiritual worship. Probably the most famous and celebrated of all Scotland's yew trees is the Fortingall Yew. It's in Glenlyon, and it's thought to be not only the oldest tree in Scotland, but probably the oldest tree in Europe. And dates are given for it that are anything from about 6,000 to 9,000 years old. Back in the 18th century, when it was measured at over 56 feet in girth. But since then, it's suffered an awful lot of damage, principally from souvenir hunters taking chunks of it away at various points. Much of the main stem is gone now, actually, and what's left are a few stems that are probably resulted from natural layering of the branches. Fortunately, it's now protected from any damage. It's got a wall around it, but this does mean that members of the public, unfortunately, cannot get up close to it and can only admire it from a distance. There's a lot of other really famous ancient yew specimens in Scotland, such as the Fraser yew and Loch Ness, and there's also the Robert the Bruce tree on the banks of Loch Lomond, which is very close to where I live, and they all have a lot of history associated with them. Probably the largest collection or kind of assemblage of yews is at Loch Lomond as well, and they're on an island in Slonich in the middle of the loch, and where there's probably about 800 yews scattered across the island. These are not naturally occurring though, and they were actually all planted firstly by Robert the Bruce back in the 14th century, who wanted an ongoing supply of yew wood for longbows for his archers. I suspect he didn't harvest too many of them though, because the yew required for longbows really has to be probably about 100 years old or so. Back in the 19th century, yews were farmed on Inchlonnig, and they caused a lot of damage to the yew trees that were growing there, resulting in probably about 300 or so having to be removed. However, that was followed by a period of new planting over a space of maybe 20 years or so. And so it's very obvious now when you visit the island that there's two ages of yews. I've been fortunate enough to visit it quite a number of times, and it's absolutely a stunning sight to see so many yews on such a small area. I think one thing, I mean, if any of your listeners are interested in yews, there's a really interesting website that's been created by the Ancient Yew Group, who have basically been compiling a gazetteer of ancient yews across, well, it started off as just the UK, but it's actually it extends across Europe now. And within the records are available online, and there's probably about 100 records for Scotland of ancient and veteran yew trees, and a lot of the history and stories that are associated with them are also, there's information about them on the website too.
Well, that's fantastic. We'll put the link to that in the show notes as well, so people will be able to follow that up.
The other interesting thing about the gazetteer is, as well as existing yew trees, it has, somewhat poignantly, it has records of what they call lost yews. So that's yews that have been lost within living memory, or that there are sufficiently reliable records that we knew that these trees actually did exist. So one of the really interesting examples of that is the Bernera yew. Now, Bernera is a small tidal island just off Lismore. And there was, back in the, I think about the 4th or 5th century, there was an enormous yew tree supposed to have been growing above a cliff there that was actually St. Columba was reputed to have preached under. And it existed very happily right up until the 18th century, when unfortunately the Campbells of Loch Nell decided to fell it and turn it into a staircase for their castle. And history has it that particular branch of the Campbell family have been plagued with bad luck ever since, including a fire at the castle at Loch Nell, which actually resulted in the destruction of the whole castle. But amazingly, the staircase that was made from the yew has actually survived. In recent years, they've actually discovered that the yew tree on Bernera is actually still alive, that some regrowth from the roots that had actually on the cliff face it's still there and still thriving, which is absolutely amazing. So that's probably, you know, well over 1,000 years old, probably 2,000 years old that tree actually is. The other thing that's worth noting is that there's a lot of clues and place names in Scotland that suggest that there were a lot more yews in the landscape at one stage, and that these yews were important enough for places to actually be named after them. So the Gaelic for yew is Yuvar, and so places like Inverurie and Kilnure, they're probably all derived from the name yew. And in fact, the name Iona is also probably yew, but that's derived from Pictish. And obviously I don't speak Pictish, but the Pictish spelling of Iona was I-O-U-A. And so that's thought that probably there must have been yew trees at one stage on Iona as well. We should probably also note, though, that juniper was sometimes called mountain yew in Scotland in the past. And so some of the names that we think are probably yew-derived may actually have referred to juniper instead. For anybody, I think, who's interested in researching or finding out more information about yews and ancient yews in the landscape, the Woodland Trust has got a really interesting project called the Ancient Tree Hunt that's been going now for about 20 years, actually. And really it encourages volunteers and members of the public to look for and record ancient trees in their local areas. And now we know that Scotland has got one of the highest numbers of ancient trees of any country in Europe, but we actually really lack a lot of information about them. Anybody who is interested, if you go onto the Woodland Trust website and search for ancient tree inventory, you should be able to look up records of any trees within your local area, and then you can add any records that you think should be there but that are missing. So there's a facility on there to do that. So anybody who's interested, please do have a look.
Yew is very poisonous to animals. How should you manage this risk?
Yes, yew is very poisonous. Every part of a yew tree is poisonous, apart from the aril around the berry. So there are recorded cases of animals dying from ingestion of yew. I think historically, yew has been managed by basically removing it, or at least by not replanting where it's been lost. And that probably is why we have so few yews left in the landscape in Scotland. I would say, though, that like a lot of plants that are poisonous to livestock, yew isn't thought to be particularly palatable. So it's likely that most animals will ignore it for most of the year. The only time it's probably a real risk is actually in the spring, when the new growth is quite tender. And also there's not a lot else around for livestock to eat. So they'll probably have a go at things that they wouldn't normally bother with. So it's probably the best way to manage the risk is to separate livestock from yew trees.
if we want to plant yew, how should we think about incorporating it into the landscape?
Well, as we've just discussed about the risks to livestock, I think it's sensible to plant yew in areas where livestock can be excluded, just basically to avoid there being any issues at all. So that could be, for example, if there is a garden ground within a croft, or if there are shelter belts, or maybe enclosures designed specifically to separate livestock from trees. Or if there's woodlands there's no intention of ever reintroducing livestock grazing to, and these obviously would be the best places to introduce yew trees to. I mean, you should also point out that not all crofts have livestock, so there are woodland crofts, and it's perfectly possible for yew trees to coexist with other species within woodlands. The other thing about yews is they're actually incredibly shade tolerant, so it's possible to plant them into existing woodlands. So that's another way of actually, you know, increasing the amount of yew that we do have in the landscape.
What are your top tips for establishing yew?
Yew grows particularly well on calcareous soils. So basically anywhere where the bedrock is limestone, and we do actually have quite a lot of areas of limestone in Scotland. These areas are ideal for growing it. But having said that, yew is actually very tolerant of quite a wide range of soil types. So it can actually grow on most soils. What it really doesn't like is wet conditions and permanently wet conditions. So really any soils that are very peaty or poorly drained are very unlikely to be able to support yews. And if anybody's interested in trying to grow their own yews, it's relatively easy to grow new trees from semi-ripe cuttings taken late autumn. I know a lot of folk have had quite a lot of success with that. Certainly more success from growing cuttings than from growing yew from seed. I think growing yews from seed takes quite a lot of skill and definitely a lot of patience, because the seed needs to be kept at quite a stable temperature for several months for it to just to prepare it for germination. And then once it's sown, it can take 2 or 3 years for it to actually germinate. So it's quite a slow process that, as I say, cuttings seem to be a much more reliable method of actually propagating new trees.
If you already have yew on your croft, how should you manage it?
Well, ideally, what you want to do is keep the canopy of the tree should be kept above browsing height of whatever livestock it is that you have on your croft. However, as well as keeping livestock and other animals away from the foliage, you really want to keep animals away from the stem and the branchwood, because yews have dormant buds which are stimulated into growth if the tree is stressed in any way. And I mean, stress can just be by animals rubbing against it, the way that sheep and cattle often do. And basically what that will do is it will result in the growth of dense foliage all over the trunk. And that, of course, is a hazard potentially to any kind of livestock. So it's best really just to keep animals and yew trees separated if possible.
Are there any pests or diseases that we should be concerned about?
Well, generally yews are very resistant to pests and diseases, probably as a result of the toxicity of the wood and the foliage. They have a very, very high polyphenol and tannin content, which is basically makes them resistant to pretty much everything. However, there is a genus of fungal pathogens called Phytophthora, of which there are thousands of species all across the globe. And in fact, you know, fungi like potato blight are caused by Phytophthoras. But there is one species of Phytophthora called Phytophthora cinnamomae that now affects yew trees. And about 10 years ago, there was a bit of an outbreak of it around Loch Lomond, and a lot of yew trees were actually lost at that time. And it seemed to kind of die out, but it did raise awareness of the fact that actually yew trees that I think we've all always considered to be completely resistant to any kind of, you know, any kind of pest or disease are actually quite vulnerable to at least to some fungal pathogens anyway. There is a tiny midge gall that also attacks yew trees. It doesn't actually cause it really much harm, but it causes the development of galls in the terminal buds of the foliage. And they actually, they're quite an odd looking thing, and they're the shape of artichokes. They're actually called artichoke galls. But these are really probably the only two things that affect yews that I'm aware of. And there are other fungi that will colonise the dead woods, such as chicken of the woods, which is an edible fungus. And that's very obvious. You really do notice that on yew trees, maybe like in the late summer, early autumn. But other than those, I don't really know of anything else that affects ewes.
In your work, have people mentioned any local lore about you?
Well, there's obviously a lot of folklore and mysticism that's associated with ewe, and rightly so. As a species, it's been around for a very, very long time. Ewes, as we all know, is extremely long-lived, and it's got this astonishing ability to layer branches into the ground and then to root. These branches then root and they form new stems. And it basically allows the tree to continue growing even after the main stem has rotted and died. And as a result of this, or probably as a result of this, is associated in Scottish folklore, particularly with death and rebirth. And in Scotland, sprigs of ewe were often placed in coffins, and they were often considered to be good luck, and they were brought indoors during the winter. And there's a lot of kind of records of this, of these kind of customs taking place in Scotland. But to be honest with you, I think ewe has been such a rare species in the Highlands for such a long time now that there's probably less folklore associated with it in the Highlands of Scotland than there are in other parts of the UK, where it is much more abundant, for example, in Wales and Cumbria and down in the southeast of England. So I think we probably lack a bit of folklore, or maybe we've just lost it because it's so far back in time now.
Finally, you mentioned the long bows, but what other uses can you be put to?
Just to build on the information about long bows, I mean, long bows are kind of associated with medieval times, and that was really when a lot of ewe was used, was really at that particular point. But I think it's worth mentioning that the oldest wooden artefact that's ever been found in the UK was the Clacton spear, was actually a spear that was made of ewe, and it's been dated at about 250,000 years old. Absolutely astonishing, and was found in remarkably good condition as well. And even in Scotland, down at Carrifran in the Scottish borders, an actual ewe longbow was retrieved from a peat bog. And when it was carbon dated, it was discovered to be about 6,000 years old. So, I mean, the history of use of ewe is incredible. You know, it's been long recognised as incredibly versatile and very durable. I mean, it's also more recent history. It's been used a lot in furniture making and for flooring. It's been used a lot in production of musical instruments. And in fact, in Highland Scotland, it was the preferred wood for clarsax and for the pipes, for bagpipes. So we have a long history of use for it. And it's probably would have made great fencing material as well, because the wood is so durable. We don't have ewe available in large quantities. And so nowadays it's used for very specialist, like wood turning for particular objects and that kind of thing. It's just not really available in the quantities that allow it to be used for the variety of things that it possibly could be. More recently, ewe has actually been used in pharmacology to produce Taxol, which is an anti-cancer drug. High concentrations of this chemical are found in ewe foliage, particularly in spring growth. And back in the 1990s, when they discovered this, people were asked to actually collect ewe clippings and send them off to labs in various places in the UK where they extracted the drug. Now there is actually an artificial form of the chemical that's been developed. And so as far as I know, the clippings are no longer collected, but it's a really interesting use of plants in medical science, really.
Thank you very much for your time today. I really enjoyed learning so much more about this remarkable tree. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this special Spotlight mini-series episode on Trees of the Gaelic World. A special thanks to Jeanette Sutherland for the concept, research and the interviews. Thanks to Dr. Michael Newton for his lore and language insight. And a thanks to our team of advisors from the Woodland Trust for their insights and advice. You can listen to all four episodes in the mini-series now. Just look for the Rural Roundup on your preferred podcast player and look for the Spotlight Gaelic Trees.
The Farm Advisory Service Podcast. Audio advice on livestock, crops and soils, environment, rural business, and more. brought to you in association with the Scottish Government.